You're listening to the 50th Anniversary Rose Bowl Celebration on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL Bloomington. The 50th Anniversary Rose Bowl Celebration is proudly brought to you by IU Credit Union and supported by the Runcible Spoon, Bloomington Hardware, Bloomington Barbershop, IU Varsity Club, Carpets Plus Color Tile, Crazy Horse Restaurant, and the IU Athletic Department. Your hosts for the evening are Mike Glascott and Dave Novak.
It's been 50 years since Indiana's remarkable Rose Bowl run, and WGCL is set to celebrate. Tonight at C3, we celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Rose Bowl, presented by IU Credit Union. We'll have appearances tonight from Rose Bowl players Eric Stolberg, Jade Butcher, Ken Kaczmarek, Harold Morrow, E.G. White, and Bob Monahan, along with journalists Max Skirvin and Bob Hamill. We'll tell the stories, relive the fun, relive the fantastic memories of the 1967 season and the 1968 Rose Bowl. Thank you for joining us. I'm Mike Glascott alongside Dave Novak, and our buddy from Indiana University to help make this all possible is Mark Deal. Welcome to C3 in Renwick. You're listening to WGCL Radio. Mark, I can't thank you enough for putting this together. We met on the practice fields in football back in August, and you came up to me and you said, "Geez, it's too bad we can't put this together." And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, "Well, it's a 50th Rose Bowl celebration. Where are we going to put this?" And I said, "Wait a second. We're going to find somewhere to put this. That's not going to be the problem." And I saw the light bulb go off in your head, and you said, "Let me make one phone call, and I'll get back to you, and the rest is history." Tell us how you got this group of guys together.
Well, thanks a million to Eric Stolberg here, who's the owner of C3, actually, it was like the next day Eric came out to practice, and I'd said something to him that we wanted to do something for celebrate the Rose Bowl reunion, and especially the guys that played here in town and from here in town, and we wanted to do it live at a place, and Eric said, "Let's do it at my place," and it was done then, as soon as that, and Eric made this all happen. And thank you so much, Eric Stolberg, for making this happen. What a crowd we have here tonight. This is unbelievable.
Packed house, not surprising, because this team was surprising. And I think any time you can tell this story of how the stars aligned, how the plays aligned, punt, John, punt, bounces, fumbles, rosters. I'm glad we have 2 hours tonight.
You could use probably 6 hours and not get everything in tonight, Glass. But it's fun, and we just got out of a meeting of our Rose Bowl reunion committee, our last meeting heading into the reunion, which is next week, the 17th and 18th, and the team will be honored at the Rutgers Indiana game on the 18th, and then a private dinner for the team members and the support people from the team after the game in the Hall of Champions there in the Memorial Stadium.
And Mark, everybody knows Indiana football's history, but there's a couple teams that have the exalted status here at Indiana football, and certainly the Rose Bowl, the one Rose Bowl that Indiana's been to, it has that status. We've got the trophy right in front of you. It's pretty big. It's pretty special in the history of Indiana football. So talk about what you hear from alumni talking over the years about what their pride is in this team.
Well, it's a tremendous amount of pride, and my family takes a tremendous amount of pride because my dad was the captain of the first Big Ten championship team in 1945 that went undefeated, and then my brother Mike played on the 1967 Rose Bowl team and Big Ten championship team, and I was the black sheep of the family, the deal that didn't win a Big Ten championship, unfortunately. So, but Coach Allen and I, we're working on that, so hopefully we can get that accomplished here in the near future. But I was a 10-year-old little boy, and I went to every game but the Minnesota game and the Arizona game. I went to the Rose Bowl. And putting this reunion together is really neat. And so much help with Harold Morrow and Doug Cruzan and E.G. White for this. And it's really neat. Sharon White said something to me a few years ago, I think that 5 years ago at the last reunion, and it's true that this reunion, and it's a labor of love for me because I get to be that 10-year-old little boy again, and when they're here. And you know, this team was my idols growing up as a 10-year-old and playing football at that time, Pop Warner, and watching my brother play and Jade and all everybody. You know, they were my idols growing up watching them because I saw all the games and watched, you know, every game for, you know, for 3 years there from 67 to 69. And so, again, it's neat. I get to be the 10-year-old little boy again.
And how long does it take you to organize one of these reunions for this crew? About 15 minutes because everybody wants to get back together?
It takes a lot. Our first meeting was in, I think it was January, wasn't it, Doug? Yeah, I think we met first. First meeting was in January. And so it's, you know, it's about an 11-month process. And right now, as of right now, we have 98 members of the family of the team that are coming back. For this, which is pretty amazing when you consider it's 50 years and 98 people, and there are more I know that plan on coming. That I'm a little bit of a pest. I bug them about coming, you know, getting back and getting their stuff in. So
supposed to RSVP.
Yeah, exactly. And but we've got 98 coming back. So yeah, this is a long time planning. When I get done at IU, I think I'm gonna be a wedding planner. I think that's gonna be my next thing that I'm gonna go for. So
Mark,
my wife is nodding her head over there in the corner.
He's good, isn't he? He's good. Mark Diehl joining us here as we celebrate the 50th anniversary celebration of the 1967 Rose Bowl team. You brought a trophy tonight. We can't say, "Hey, look at it on radio." So please describe it to the folks that are listening at home or on WGCLradio.com, wherever they may be in the wonderful world.
It is a three-tiered base with a beautiful cup and a football player on top in gold. And it is says Indiana University on the front, 1967 Big Ten champions. And got all the season scores on there. And head coach John Pont with their 9-1 season.
And your comment when you walked in, you said, "Hey, I spend a lot of time with the old oaken bucket, and that's a fantastic piece of history. Lots of eyes in that bucket, but there's only how many of these?"
There's only two of these.
Yeah, there's only
unfortunately,
two of those.
Unfortunately, we're working on the third, but there's only two of these.
And I think a lot of people have seen the bucket.
Yeah, the bucket gets around. We like it, but the bucket gets around.
The last
That's why I brought this tonight. Yeah. Instead of bringing I could have brought the bucket, but I thought, no, I'm going to bring this because this is unique. It is very unique.
Well, that year it meant not only a bucket against Purdue, it also meant the Big Ten Championship, which, of course, is very special for Indiana. Every one of these to get together has to be special, too, because there's been, over time, more bowl teams that have come together, and every one of them has got to be enjoyable for you.
Oh, I have a ball. I have relationships with all of them. I'm part of the 1979 Holiday Bowl championship team, and in 2 years we'll do our 40th reunion. Having worked for Coach Mallory, and you know we're going to do something for the 88 Liberty Bowl champions next year, and we just did this year a 10-year reunion of the Insight Bowl at the Georgia Southern game, in which the players wore the kind of the rock kind of inspired jerseys and the Coach Hep sticker on their helmets, and that was really cool. And having done the coolest thing for this group will be on Friday night, and we're going to gather Friday night at Nick's upstairs in an informal kind of reception. The coolest thing, and it is for my teammates too, is watching when they first get there and first see the guys. And it just picks up. And it was the same thing with the Insight Bowl. That team had not been together since December 31st, 2007. And to see those guys see Jane Heppner, and to see Jane Heppner see those guys, it was very emotional. You know, it was incredible. It was just incredible. Bill Lynch, they had a game. He wrote a letter to the team, so that they could read that and see what Coach Lynch had to do. And it was just a terrific, terrific thing.
And we're talking about the Rose Bowl tonight, but that bowl experience is different in college football than it is for all other sports. And I don't think most people understand it if you're not in with the team and you think, okay, you know, the Insight Bowl, it was 7-5. You know, it's not a Big Ten championship, but it was still special. And it was special to all those guys, and the memories there just come flooding back, like you said.
Trust me, it's very special. You know, we're working to get to our third in a row, and it's very special. And, you know, that's what people don't really, you know. I'm a big proponent of the bowl system. You know, these people that want playoffs and things are out of their minds. I guarantee you, players and coaches don't want a playoff. They don't want a playoff. You play, and people saying, oh, now with all this BCS or playoff stuff, say, okay, we need an 18 playoff. Well, I'll tell you what, for a team to have a heck of a season and get chosen for an 8, if they go to that, then they say, well, yeah, we play the first round on the higher seeds thing. So a team goes 10-11-1, and they get, for their reward,
welcome to Alabama.
They get a Friday night. They fly in Friday to Ann Arbor and go play Michigan on a Friday night, and then say they lose and their game's over. Tell me they'd rather do that, or would they rather go to Jacksonville to play in the Gator Bowl?
For a
whole week, or go to the Fiesta Bowl or something. Crazy. They don't want to go do that. Yep. And the coaches that have coached in 1AA, the guys like Jerry Kill, who've won national championships at Southern, have done very well in 1AA, they hate it. They the playoff wears them out.
Yeah.
Absolutely wears them out. And they say, well, they do it in 1AA, they do it in Division III, the collisions aren't as much. Okay? You look at our team now. We're beat up now. I mean, every team's beat up. We're not the only team in the country. You add three more games, you know, plus the, you know, conference championship. Now you're talking about playing like 16-game season. You don't have anybody left.
It's the NFL.
Yeah, you end up
playing
the
NFL feeder system.
Yeah.
But the other thing that people that are not big football fans do not perhaps understand, the 1967 season, if Indiana happened to have lost to Purdue, the Blue Bonnet Bowl, the Pool and Weed Eater Bowl, the independent, that wasn't a choice.
No.
You explain how that worked back in 1967.
The Big Ten only sent one team to a bowl game.
Was that and by their choice?
By their choice.
Okay.
And it was the Rose Bowl. Not only that, and there are some players in here, Bob and E.G. and Eric and Jade, that the following year, because the Big Ten had a rule, you couldn't repeat. So Indiana went into the 1968 season knowing they could not go to the Rose Bowl again because they were forbidden to play. Purdue went into that 1967 season. They went into that game against Indiana knowing that even if they won the game, they weren't going to the Rose Bowl because they had gone the year before. So
does that make what your earlier point was, that's why going to a bowl game is special?
Oh!
Because in the old days,
absolutely.
What did you play for in 68? We're going to ask those guys.
They played for
pride.
Winning the Big Ten championship.
And beating Purdue.
And they had a chance until the last two games of the year where they could have possibly won the Big Ten championship. Yeah, that's what you're playing for. So, you know, I'm not a that's tough. And I think the Big Ten changed their minds. You know, they have that big 30 for 30, or it's on the Big Ten Network, about Michigan. Those three Michigan teams from 72 to 74 won three straight Big Ten championships and never went to a bowl game. They were co-champions with Ohio State every year, but lost twice and had a tie against them. And Ohio State went to the Rose Bowl every year, and Michigan went nowhere. They had three Big Ten championships.
Yeah.
They lost two games in their careers, and they never went to a bowl game.
And one
that's
of them was
a shame.
One of them was a vote. The athletic directors had to vote to let
them
know. Looking back at 67, though, you know, nowadays we have all the polls that come out before the season, and, you know, everybody's got a pretty good idea across the board who's going to be good every year. You got a couple changes that happen during the course of the year. But going into 67, you know, every team says, yeah, we're going to be Big Ten champions. But when you come in 1-8 the year before, there's not a lot of people that are going to maybe buy off on that. But so this team wasn't on anybody's radar going into the season, which makes this season even more amazing.
I think when Bob Hamill gets up here, he can really speak to some of those things. Not even close. And Bob and I have had a lot of discussions about this, and nobody knows more about these things than Bob. And And this season and what these guys did was so unprecedented. And it was just so remarkable because we went 1-8-1. From 1-8-1 to 9-1, Beano Cook, I had seen that it said something that probably that had never happened in college football and may never happen again. Not even the Illinois, when they went to the Rose Bowl with Barnett the year before, they were pretty good. They were getting better. They were like 4-7 or something like that. It wasn't 1-8-1,
right?
And dead last, and where nobody expected anything. And then all of a sudden, you know, this team, this great IU team, is winning the Big Ten and going to the Rose Bowl.
Well, speaking of Bob Hamill and Max Skirvin, they're going to join us next as we'll get their thoughts on the season, we'll get their thoughts on the team, the coaching staff, and how it all came together. You're listening to the 50th celebration of the 1967 Indiana Football Hoosiers from C3 in Renwick on WGCL. Welcome back to C3 here in lovely Bloomington on a Wednesday night, November 8th. It's been 50 years since Indiana's remarkable Rose Bowl run, and we're here to celebrate it tonight. Throughout the evening, we'll be talking to Rose Bowl players Eric Stolberg, Jade Butcher, Ken Kaczmarek, Harold Morrow, E.G. White, and Bob Monahan. Big thanks to Indiana's Mark Deal for putting everything together this evening, as he is taking care of things, and we'll also speak to the captain of the 67 Hoosiers, Doug Cruzan, a little bit later in the program as well. We're at C3 in Renwick. You can also pick up Mickey Maurer's book, Cinderella Ball, the Indiana Hoosiers run for the Rose Bowl in 1967. The guys will sign it, too. They're here tonight to help out. So a great presentation, and we thank Eric Stolberg and C3 for hosting us tonight. Alongside Dave Novak, I'm Mike Glasgow. Thank you for being with us, and our panel of experts is growing exponentially, and we have two of the gentlemen who covered every moment of the 1967 team. Thank you for joining us tonight, Max Skirvin and Bob Hamill. Max, we read an article a few years ago that you haven't missed an Indiana game in a long, long time. What's your streak at now?
Well, we're talking about home games.
Right.
I've not missed a home game, I guess, since the start of the 59-58 season. So that's been quite a while. I don't know however many years that would be. The all games, when I was back doing games on the radio, I had one streak of 333. So it's a lot of football.
And you've seen a lot of great plays, but you've never seen a team like the 67 Hoosiers. Tell me all about it.
Well, no, obviously not, as you guys have already been talking about that. Although, when you talk about reminiscing, Bob, I don't remember what I had for lunch yesterday. I mean, 50 years ago, that's been a long, long time. But I'm sure we all have memories of certain things that happened. I heard you talking about, I think it was Bob a minute ago, talking about the telegram, the Arizona game of Punt John Punt. I must confess to you that I lied slightly on the air. I don't know whether there's a tape of that game or not, but when John at the Michigan ran with the ball instead of punting, I deliberately said, well, I'm not quite sure what happened on that snap, because I was afraid if that turned out to be the key and they lost the game, they would kill John when he got that. I literally said, it made it very confusing whether what he really did.
And it's interesting because the game before that with Iowa, there was a call, fourth down, that could have been kick John kick instead of punt John punt. Those plays were unbelievable at that time in the season.
There are so many of those kind of plays all during that season that just unbelievable. I mean, you know, the fake punt and all the fake field goal and all those kind of things. I'm sure Bob remembers them much more than I do.
Well, let's bring in Bob Hamill, the longtime Hall. Well, you guys are in too many Hall of Fames. We can't sit here all night and count them all out. But Bob, football was a little different back in that day. We talked about the only one team going to the bowl. Tell us about the Indiana team in those last couple weeks, and we'll go back through the season. Did they know they had a chance if they lost to Minnesota to get the votes?
Well, the remarkable thing about this season was these guys did not accept the idea that Indiana can't win, and they did it right from the beginning. They committed to losing a lot of weight to get to run that sprint option. Doug Cruzan the personal sacrifices these guys made was remarkable. Doug was a leading pro prospect as an offensive lineman. He gave up that his particular spot to play defense his senior year, and he was a captain. And then he was drafted in the first round by Miami, and Doug is not only on the only Indiana Rose Bowl team, he's on the only NFL team that ever went unbeaten and won the Super Bowl. So but in the process, Doug lost a lot of weight and was actually lighter than he was in high school. The sacrifice he made, the sacrifice Terry Cole made to go from being a glory filled running back to the blocking back in that spread out offense, and that goes up and down the line. Bobby Russell gave up going to medical school so he could come back and play his senior year as a guard, and was an outstanding guard. I think a lot of things about this team are forgotten, and one of them being how important the defense was. People like me fell in love with those three sophomores in the offense, and Harry, John, and Jade were a big part of why this team went to Pasadena. But so was the defense, and one of the really interesting things to me was the coincidence that the average score, you total up the scores for the year, the average score for this team was 19-14, which is exactly the Purdue score. They were fun, but they also knew from the beginning they had a chance to do something. They rejected that idea. I get so sick of reading even this year where, this is the way Indiana's supposed to be. They're supposed to lose these games. Those guys never accepted that. They won game after game in the final seconds, in the final two or three minutes, because they believed. And obviously you have to start with John Pond on that. He was the architect of all this, and he was the National Coach of the Year, and boy, did he deserve it.
We got Bob Hamill and Max Skirvin with us, who had a part to observing and watching and reporting on that team. So from the outside, the team knows what they can do or thinks what they can do, but from the outside, when did it come into your guys' minds that this is a team that could really do something special?
Well, I think the beginning point for this season was the year before when the freshmen went over to Ohio State and beat Ohio State. that was the first time when all of a sudden they started feeling like, hey, we can play in this league. I think from very early on they had the feeling. I was on the Big Ten Skyriders trip, and the Skyriders would visit every school, They end up ranking Indiana either the last or next last. It was back and forth with Northwestern regularly. Nobody thought this team could do anything, but that team thought they could.
Yeah.
When we stopped at Notre Dame, Eric Parsig, I went up to talk to him afterwards because he was John Pont's coach in college, and I said, you know that they got a lot of high hopes down there, and he said, well, let me see their schedule. So I showed it to him, and he looked at Kansas. Kentucky is the opener, and Kansas put his finger on the Illinois game, and he said, if they can win those first two games and win that Illinois game, they'll have a really good year. Well, that's exactly what happened, and the guy who won that, made the key play in that Illinois game, it's 13-7 in the fourth quarter. Kenny Kaczmarek picked off a pass and ran it in for a touchdown that clinched the game, and then he heaved that ball into the end zone. That's today that would get him in trouble, but That was the mark of that season. By the way, Mark Neal, this trophy. I was thinking that guy on top. Really, I was going to suggest a change to it, but I see that one of these four figures on the bottom has that ball hoisted the way Jade Butcher always used to.
Jade put that ball
that
up.
Ball's up there. That's a Jade hoist.
Jade put that ball up when he would score the touchdown. Absolutely.
Now, you mentioned the other dynamic that doesn't get talked about much, and that's freshmen didn't play at that time.
Right.
So you mentioned the 66 freshman team. Those are the ones that became the sophomores that made such a difference on the offense.
That was Harry, John, and Jade, and a lot of other pretty good players that did not accept the idea Indiana couldn't win.
E.G. and Eric were
Bobby, you remember we went to Ohio State, and I believe that's where the freshmen played when we were over there that day.
Yeah, they did. It was over there.
I was there. They played on a Friday.
You know, ironically, that's the only time that team ever played Ohio State.
Yes.
Those guys, because their full 3 years, those sophomores on that team never played Ohio State.
They played Friday afternoon on the Ohio State practice field. Yeah. Howard Brown was the head coach of the freshman team, and they had never played there was never a freshman game until then. And IU played on the next day. The varsity played against Ohio State. And my brother Mike was a sophomore, was a freshman, the 67 was a freshman on that team.
You know, guys,
I drove over there and watched that game. It was 13-8, EG, right? Yes.
But, you know, two guys that are not commonly given a lot of credit for this. Howard Brown and developing those kids, but Bob Baker was a really gifted quarterback coach, and he took both Harry Gonzo and John Eisenbarger and had them both ready to play major college football as a freshman, and it was just a. As Max said, it's hard to remember what we had for breakfast, but I can remember so many things from that 67 season.
Let me ask you about the players, Eisenbarger and Gonzo, the sophomores. How was John Pont able to bring them in? Because before that, Phil Dickens' crew's record wasn't very...
Well, John had a great lineup on that out of Pasadena, because he explained it at a press conference out there how they sold the idea they could be the first to do something. And one of the guys that there was a little cynical, and he said, "So you basically sold losing." He said, "You were telling them a very negative thing to sell them on coming." He said, "John said, well, they sell life insurance every year."
What was it like reporting though on the dynamic of bringing those sophomores in, because they had some flash and dash on the offensive side, and it sounds like there was maybe some headbutting year before and going into that year?
Well, I'm afraid in reporting we overdid the sophomores because the defense, but that's part of the team aspect of this. Those seniors never seemed to buy that, but they just redoubled their effort and won one ball games, and obviously. That made the Purdue game so sweet because the defense was the key to it, and the running back that won that game was Terry Cole. He had his one big day of the season, 155 yards, and it was a wonderful, wonderful way to finish that season.
And I might say that, speaking of Terry Cole, this man right here, Max Gerben, his call of that winning touchdown, 63 yards, that won the game, and sent us to the Rose Bowl. That is one of the great calls all time, his play-by-play call. It gives me chills when I hear it. And Max, that was an unbelievably great call you had of that touchdown run.
Let's face it, how many times you have that opportunity? You know, they don't come along every day. But I was thinking, you were talking about the Purdue game, Bob. You remember the Minnesota game was just before that, and that was awful. I mean, I could still see that kickoff just bobbling along the ground, and nobody covered it. I mean, by that point, they were already out of it anyway, but it was just unbelievable, the reverse of what happened between that game and the Purdue game.
They packed it all into one about a seven. You know, the thing about that Minnesota game was 33-7. That game was winnable. In the middle of the last quarter, it's 13-7, and they have a shot to win the ball game. Everything went wrong from there on, but they... The genius of this team was they packed all their mistakes into 7 minutes and lived to go.
That's interesting because they hadn't won 8-1, 2-8. They really didn't have a basis to say, oh, we can get through this. That's what makes this team special.
That's what I'm saying. They did not. They absolutely rejected the idea that Indiana was consigned to losing. They did not believe that, and they totally disproved it.
And throughout the season, you talked about the scoring margin. Almost every game besides Arizona, Wisconsin comes down to the last 2 minutes.
They all went down to the last thing. Wisconsin was in here last week, and it happened to be. That's the only game. The dates match up on Saturday dates with that year, this year. And Wisconsin was the only game that was actually on the same date and the same site. Purdue will be the same date, but it's up there. But Wisconsin came in there winless. They went winless. But it was 14-9, and they were passing in the end zone at the end, and a guy was open. And Dan Jenkins wrote in Sports Illustrated that the Wisconsin quarterback was John Boyajian from Hammond, Indiana.
Hammond High.
And Jenkins said Boyajian that Reddick was open in the end zone. The Boyajian threw it over the library, and the Hoosiers won another game. but I don't mean to leave it as luck. But now there was that team won on guts and great play, and that they got a little help with the way with that last pass. But part of that was Harry Gonzo was hurt that week too. He'd been hurt in the Arizona game, and their timing was not good in that against Wisconsin.
But speaking of that Arizona game, you know, as during the season, I would have people tell me what they were doing at certain times. Like one guy said he mashed his finger. He got so excited, and then he was building fence, and he hit his finger instead of the nail. But anyway, this Arizona game, as you recall, we jumped out to a big league early. And somebody back here said, well, they were going to have a beer every time they had a touchdown. They didn't even know what happened in the second half.
Harry got hurt very early in that game. He had a long run down to the 1 yard line, and he ended up taking it in. But that was the last play of the game for him. And Mike Perry took over and did a really good job. And in retrospect, probably should have started the Wisconsin game because he was a little more ready. But they weren't going to break up the charm of that backfield.
They sure were. That's Bob Hamill and Max Skirvin joining us tonight. We're live at C3. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk the Rose Bowl game a little bit. Mark Deal is with us as well. Before we start talking to some of the players, we'll talk to the gentleman who covered it. How old were you at the Rose Bowl, Mark?
10 years old.
So your mind is fresh. You remember everything from that day?
I remember a lot of things.
Good.
A lot of things from that day. It was quite a day.
I was eight when George Talaferro beat Michigan.
Yes,
start launched that 45 season
in 1945.
So I can understand how those things live with you forever.
And we'll have more conversation with the greats who have made the 1967 Indiana Football Hoosiers one of legendary proportions. You're listening to the 50th celebration of the 1967 Indiana Hoosiers football program from C3 in Renwick on WGCL. Welcome back to C3 in Renwick. It's been 50 years since the Indiana's remarkable Rose Bowl run, and we're here to celebrate tonight, along with Dave Novak and Mark Deal. I'm Mike Glascott. Thank you for joining us. And we thank our friends at the IU Credit Union for making this all possible, plus all of our sponsors tonight. It's the 50th anniversary Rose Bowl celebration right here at C3 in Renwick. And Dave, we've had a busy night already, recapping all the great times and great stories, and we're joined by Mark Deal from Indiana University is in charge of the Director of Alumni Relations and the wide receiving corps from the 1967 team. Our host tonight, Eric Stolberg, and Jade Butcher joining us. Gentlemen, thank you so much. You sometimes lose words because of the magnitude of the situation. When you guys were sophomores, did you realize this was a big deal, Eric, coming onto the team, getting this action, getting to play?
Well, it was... What was great for Jay and I is that we were not allowed to play as freshmen. And so for us, this was the first opportunity for us to play on the varsity. I mean, we played against them in practice all the time, and we thought, you know, we had a good, really good freshman class. But we played two freshman games that year. We played Ohio State and Michigan State. And it was interesting because we played Ohio State at Columbus, and that was a team that was led by Rex Kern. And our senior year, they went on to win the national championship. Well, not that day. We played them Saturday before the actually Friday afternoon before the Saturday game with IU and Ohio State, and we beat them. And frankly, we beat them pretty well. And it was a great team. They had all the players that went on to win the national championship. So we felt pretty good about that. We weren't so lucky, though, when we played the Michigan State freshman team. We got beat. But we got revenge because the next 3 years we played Michigan State up there in East Lansing and beat them every year. So it was really, really good.
And some of those games, Jade, against Michigan State, those were physical affairs.
Michigan State, I don't know how to say it politely, but they were a bunch of crooks. But also, they were a great team. They were coached by Duffy Daugherty, and he was a great coach. And we went up there and beat him 3 years in a row, which is outstanding. And I was, matter of fact, I got a game ball from one of those years, so I cherish it very dearly.
Yeah, the Rose Bowl, we talk about that. You know, it's obvious at the end of the season that's the goal for everyone going in. But how much did you believe it going in? You had the freshman season. You only played the two games. So how good did you feel about yourselves going in, adding on to the Hoosier team, and whether that was really realistic in your mind?
I'll be honest with you. We didn't think about that. I mean, we were just thinking about, okay, the first game is Kentucky. Let's try and win this game. We never thought beyond the next game, and I can say that unequivocally for all my teammates. We were so focused at one game at a time, because you got to remember, we were winning these games by 1, 2, 3 points, so it really wasn't like we were beating up on everybody. They were very, very tight games, so our focus was always straight ahead, next team that we play, that's who we wanted to focus on. You know, I don't know what Jade would think. He can tell you this, but maybe we did a little bit of looking ahead when we got beat in Minnesota. I don't know. I'm not going to say one way or the other, but that was the only game we lost that week, and then we had the big Purdue game the next week, which, of course, we won. But I can say for myself, I really wanted to go to the Rose Bowl, but I didn't think about the Rose Bowl until Perry Williams fumbled the ball on the 2-yard line, and we recovered the fumble.
Kester.
Then I started thinking about the Rose Bowl.
We've got wide receivers from the 67 team, Eric Stolberg and Jade Butcher, with us. How hard is it as wide receivers to watch that speed option being run over and over and over, and all you want is the ball and a chance at a scoring?
Well, yeah, the speed option was fantastic, and Coach Pont brought the speed option in, and we felt real confident going into those games. Matter of fact, Eric was talking about the Minnesota game, and that's a game we should have won, no doubt. There was a bunch of errors that I contributed to that situation. But again, you know, the Purdue game, at that time we thought, hey, if we can beat these guys, we got a chance to go to the Rose Bowl. But we didn't talk about it a lot, but that's the way it was, and I'm just happy that we turned out the way we did, so appreciate it.
Yeah, Jay was talking about that speed option. We had this great play where we would run the speed option so many times, people knew that we were going to run it, so they would come up and support really fast. And so it was always really fun when Harry Gonzo would pitch it to John Eisenberg, and John Eisenberg would stop and throw a touchdown pass to Jade Butcher. So that got their attention really quick.
Wide open.
Really wide open. So that got their attention. The other thing I liked about the speed option when they ran it to my side was we were able to crack back block on defensive linemen and linebackers, and they didn't see you coming, and they were much bigger than we were, so we had a lot of fun with that.
I was just going to say that the fact that we basically had two guys that could throw the football as well as they did, and we moved John Eisenberger from quarterback to tailback 10 days before the first game and made Harry the quarterback, and Terry Cole, who's the hero of the Purdue game, unselfishly went to play fullback, and we talked about that earlier. But John became such a great – he was a quintessential triple threat player. He could run, he could pass, he could punt when he decided to. But John could do everything, and – Eric put that up just exactly. We'd run the speed option, kick it to him, the corner go up, and John could throw the ball very well. And he could throw the ball on the run. He'd hit Eric, he'd hit Jade on that, and it was just such a weapon that we had. And really brilliant tactically by Bob Baker and by John Pont, no doubt about it. Just a brilliant tactically.
Be honest, it's been 50 years now. Which one was your favorite quarterback as a freshman, John or Harry? Which one did you want to get the job?
I'm going to have to say Harry.
he threw away a touchdown. We're going to see him in a couple weeks here, so I think we're both going to say Harry.
Absolutely.
And when we talk about sophomores playing with seniors, were you guys accepted into that group, or did you have to earn and play your way in, Jade?
I'll tell you what, these guys, the seniors were fantastic. They kept us all in line, believe me. I mean, Ken Kazmarek, Harold Morrow. We'd have meetings after a game. We'd all get together, and the coaches would always come back and say, "Watch Harold, watch Kenny." You know, that means something to us. It meant something to us as a team, and these guys were fantastic.
So there was no worries about
no
the young guys and
it.
The old guys getting
better. They were the bosses.
That's great, because team chemistry, that can take
Absolutely.
You a lot farther perhaps than talent, but you had both.
Yeah.
And that's what made that season special.
Absolutely.
Plenty of talent and plenty of chemistry.
Yeah, Jade is so right on that. We did have a great deal of chemistry between the two classes, and we, you know, I remember standing in the huddle in tight situations, and I lined up so I was directly across from Harold Morrow, our center. And I look at Monk and I would say, "It's going to be okay," because I could just see that strength and that experience, and you know, it kind of made me feel better. You know, with standing in the huddle staring at this guy before the play was called. So those guys were the, especially on defense, were the key to our going to the Rose Bowl.
Eric is really an unsung guy on that team. You know, as a wide receiver, I mean, he had a big touchdown catch against Michigan. A touchdown led to our first touchdown at Michigan State. Caught a pass in there as we were driving to get the first touchdown that Harry had in the second half that had that. Eric didn't get probably the opportunities that Jay did, but he was very unsung. Terrific blocking on the edge, and like you said, can do that. And no disrespect to Eric, but he's the first one that would back me up. This guy sitting here from Bloomington High School is the best receiver in the history of Indiana University.
I've heard that more than one spot.
It is, and I've seen them all, and we've had some great receivers and some great players. It isn't even close. And there are a few guys at Indiana that are one-name guys. Isaiah, Slick, Antoine, and Jade. He's a one-name guy at IU Athletics, and there's no doubt Jade is a one-name guy.
Now, think about this. We only got to play 3 years. This man caught 30 touchdowns in 3 years.
In 30 games. And only 10 games.
Jesus. Yeah. 10 per year.
One a game.
I mean, 30 in a three-year career. That is amazing.
Yeah. Hey, you guys are fantastic. I love you guys. But, you know, the thing of it is, this was a team effort. Everybody had a job. Everybody did their job. And everything worked out, you know. That's the way it's supposed to be. That's the way all championships are, to do your job. Mr. Indiana, too.
Well, talk about why your job was done. John Pont came in, was a well-known, well-regarded coach. He changes your offense. He changes maybe the quarterback position. It wasn't just, hey, this is great, let's keep doing it. What made him get you guys together? I don't want to say, Mark, he was the first love each other, but he might have been the first love each other.
There's no question about that. And it's interesting. In Cinderella Ball, there is, and maybe Eric can talk to it, about the Dean Kleinschmidt coming back from the Green Bay Packers, and he made the statement. I showed this to Tom Allen in the excerpt of the book when I read it this summer, that Dean said, and Coach Pond asked Dean Kleinschmidt, "What makes the Packers so good?" And he said, "They love each other." And I showed that quote to Coach Allen. And this team did love each other. I mean, it's so evident. It's so evident when they were together. These guys were 50-year Iman. It'll be so evident next Friday night when they're up at Nick's upstairs.
You can talk about that, Eric, though. How did it happen? Did you guys hang out off the field? Did you hang out after practice? What made this group care so much about each other?
Well, I can only relate my personal experience, and that was I had immense respect for my teammates, and I saw how hard everybody worked. And everybody worked really hard, and the coaches were so supportive, and you really wanted to do well for Coach Pond. And if you didn't, he'd let you know. But you just really wanted to make it happen for him, you know, because he was that kind of a coach. You know, he inspired us. But I think, you know, just overall is we had a lot of love on that team. And everybody says that and they do that, but we did. You know, we cared about each other. We took care of about each other. And, you know, we protected each other. Nobody messed with Jay. Nobody messed with me. Nobody messed with, you know, Cruzette. No, we took care of them. You know, it was us against the world, and we had to do it every game because they were so close. And the more that we were successful in one games, the closer we got and the more trust we developed.
Eric, tell your recruiting story of Coach Pont in your house. It's an awesome story.
Well, actually, you know, he when I came to Indiana University for my campus visit, two really good things happened to me. Three, actually. The first one was when I met Coach Brown, Howard Brown, who recruited me. The second was when I met Coach Pond in his office. And I'll never forget this. And I told my mother this. Is that I looked at this guy. We call him the Little Spaniard because he was a really intense man. And he said to me, I want you to come to Indiana University and help us go to the Rose Bowl. And we were going to go to the Rose Bowl. And the way he said it, the look in his eye, the determination in his face, it was like, I had no doubt. I mean, I had no doubt. And I came back and I told my mother, I said, if I go to this school, they're going to the Rose Bowl. The third thing that happened to me that weekend that was good was I met Jade Butcher. Jade Butcher and I were like 19-year-old kids, and we both were track guys and ran the hurdles. And I remember we were at a basketball game together, and Jade may remember this. He looked at me and he grabbed me by the arm and he said, Eric, you need to come to school here at Indiana University and we'll be teammates. I remember that. I told my mom that too.
Yeah, Jade, that was a pretty good idea.
It's a great idea. Hey, I'd like to add this guy right here, Mark Deal. One of our teammates, Mike Deal. He was a fantastic football player. Defensively, he was awesome. That's what made this team go. We had so many guys that could play. It brings tears to my eyes.
Good tears. Yeah. Positive tears, and that's what
Absolutely.
We like to hear. Now,
Absolutely.
The season didn't end the way you guys wanted it to, but what a great experience to go to Southern California, go to the Lowry's all-you-can-eat steak-eating contest. Hey, look, it's O.J. Simpson and the USC Trojans. Bittersweet ending or just an ending because of all the great things you just talked about?
Well, I can say that it was kind of bittersweet. We had those guys. Had we scored our touchdown instead of the field goal, we'd have had a chance at those guys. But Jeff Sager, our good friend, he said, J.J., he said, if you guys had beat those guys, we'd have been number one in the country.
Wow.
You know, that was fantastic. The whole situation was fantastic.
So when you fly out to Southern California, you go through all the hoopla. How hard was it to focus on football? I think I read somewhere the day before the game you guys had a great practice and everybody was fresh and running around. You were right there.
Right. It was there. Terry Cole, one of our teammates, he's deceased. He had every night somebody bring a bottle of wine and champagne. The whole bathtub was full of wine and champagne. Unfortunately, we lost the game. We still drink the wine.
Well, I was going to say, you celebrate one of the greatest seasons in Indiana football history.
Yeah.
Talk about how you got treated at the Rose Bowl, because it's only happened for IU and IU fans once.
It was fantastic. We had chauffeur-driven cars, two people to a car. Those people, what can I say? It's the granddaddy of all bowls, you know. I just hope we can go back there. The guys, the kids need to see it. We need to do it. It takes a lot of work. You know that, Mark.
And a lot of luck and a lot of magic, which came with The 1967 team.
I don't
team.
Know about that, but I'll tell you what, it was fantastic.
Well, catching 10 touchdown passes each season, too, that doesn't hurt anything,
I'll tell you, I had a lot of memories of that trip. One of the biggest, greatest feelings was running out on that field. And, you know, you're talking to IU fans, and then you see the Indiana and printed out in the end zone in red. And you look up and there's 100,000 people in the stands, and you know you're playing in the Rose Bowl, and you're a kid. I mean, my heart was racing so fast it took me a while to calm down before the start of the game. I will say this, that Southern Cal was a very, very, very good team.
Well put
they
together.
They had 6 first-round draft choices on that team.
Only on the first year. When you go, it was actually 9 total when you add the juniors and sophomores.
I mean,
that was just a 1 year with McCullough and Yeri and those guys.
They were studs. Yeah. They had some great players. Of course, they had OJ, but they had a lot of great players on that team, and extremely well coached. I mean, you could just tell going through the game. One thing I think hurt us a little bit is that, you know, we had quite a long layoff, you know, between the time we beat Purdue and the time we played in the game, and that's a long time. I mean, we were practicing, but still. It was quite a 3-week period before the game. I wish we could have paid them a week after we played Purdue.
You're hot. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you guys.
Jane,
you
great,
guys are fantastic.
Great everything.
You,
Eric, your hospitality is fantastic.
Eric, you're awesome.
Mark
awesome.
Deal is with us as well. We need to take a time out and thank all of our great sponsors that have put this together tonight. You are listening to the 50th anniversary presentation of the 1967 Rose Bowl team here at C3 in Renwick on WGCL and WGCLradio.com.
You're listening to the 50th anniversary Rose Bowl celebration on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL Bloomington. The 50th anniversary Rose Bowl celebration is proudly brought to you by IU Credit Union and supported by the Runcible Spoon, Bloomington Hardware, Bloomington Barbershop, IU Varsity Club, Carpets Plus Color Tile, Crazy Horse Restaurant, and the IU Athletic Department. Your hosts for the evening are Mike Glascott and Dave Novak.
Welcome back to C3 in Renwick, hour number 2 of our special presentation tonight. It's been 50 years since Indiana's remarkable Rose Bowl run, and we are celebrating tonight. We've already been joined by Eric Stolberg and Jade Butcher. The offensive side of the ball, we'll get caught up with the defense here in a minute. We thank the IU Credit Union, our presenting sponsor tonight, and all of our sponsors making this possible. And a big thanks, obviously, to the staff and crew here at C3. Eric Stolberg giving us the space for tonight. And hopefully everybody's enjoying. It looks like everybody's having a great time. A full house here. Thanks for joining us on WGCL. And this, none of this would be made possible, Dave Novak, if it wasn't for the man sitting to your left, Mark Deal. I want to call you the first family of Indiana football. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I do that? That sounds good. We should get you a title belt or something, or a placard, because the history that runs with your family through Indiana football, you've talked about seeing both Big Ten championships on your side of things and having to not deal with, that sounds like a bad pun on words there, but having to organize and be a part of this every day. We thank you for making Indiana football a special place to be, and I think these guys will agree with me 100% there.
It's a labor of love to do these things, so it's what I do.
And helping get everybody together tonight, absolutely fantastic. And, Dave, we talked offense with Jade Butcher and Eric Stolberg in our last segment. Let's move over to the other side of the ball.
We heard about the sophomores, and it seems as though, and talking to Bob Hamill, it made a lot of big deal in the press about the sophomores coming to this team. But a junior in Bob Moynihan and a senior in Ken Kaczmarek, your defense was pretty stacked at that point in time coming into the season. You guys are ready to go. Talk first about the attitude of the young guys coming up, the hot shots coming up, and what you guys thought about that. And keep in mind, this is family radio, so keep it as clean as you can. You had the sophomores coming into on the offensive side of the ball.
Okay. You know, we always play a spring game, and the spring game, when Harry and Izo and Jade and those guys came up, we were in the old stadium. We were playing on 10th Street on the old stadium, and I remember they ran that option. You know?
Had you ever seen it before?
And I was on that side of the field, and first time they pitched it out to Izzo, and I said, well, I'll meet him at the line of scrimmage. And I ran to the sideline to meet him at the line of scrimmage. By the time I got there, he was gone. Well, I said, well, we'll adjust that. Next time they did it, I better go about 3 yards deeper. Ran down there again. I'm watching him run by me. I said, yes, I'm going to have to go about 5 yards deep to meet him somewhere where the line of scrimmage is. And, I'm talking about speed and stride, and these guys are coming at the corner really hard. And, you know, I'm getting out there, and I've not had to deal with this kind of speed before. And I knew that, you know, this was a special group of guys. And the other thing I did was ticked off Harry. Harry came around the corner one time, and I met him at the sideline and kind of pushed him out of bounds. And he threw the ball at me, and, you know, and I spent the rest of the day trying to get him back.
But going into the season, I mean, you knew your defense had something special because Mark and I were talking about this off the air. You know, the offense, I think, gets the highlights because that's what's exciting to watch, the touchdowns. You guys average 2 touchdowns against a game, and that's fantastic. So really, to me, I look at this and I see what stands out to me is those low scores. The defense was fantastic all year long.
Well, we did a couple things before the season. After spring football, our coaching staff before spring football actually went down to the University of Alabama, and they watched their drills and how they did things. And we went to a lot of what we call quick drills, where we would go for 20 straight minutes going from group to group, and you were constantly moving, hitting, rolling. And so it gave us a lot of agility. The second thing we did is we switched defenses from a 5-3 to a 44 defense. And one of the reasons is we had an abundance of linebackers. We had about 8 good linebackers that could play, and we all had good speed. The third thing we did is we all lost weight. Actually, I was supposed to come back at 210, which I did, but by the end of we worked out so hard, but by the end of double sessions, I was actually back up to 220 again, and that's why I really played that the whole year. So that quickness, the change of just a change of attitude, and the 4-4 defense really helped us a lot.
Talk a little bit about that change. When he came to you and said, we're going to drop weight, we're going to be quicker, what was the attitude at that point in time?
Well, I there's probably some resistance, but what it did is it separated us from the other Big Ten teams who were, you know, had bigger linemen. And what was interesting is even when you go into the Rose Bowl itself, if you look at Southern Cal, they were much faster than we were. Okay, they had Earl McCullough, Simpson, and even their linemen were big, but they were like 6'4 and 6'5 and 265, but they were thin because of their height. But if you look at us, we were quicker than they were. And by quickness, I mean the first 2 yards. We could hit them before they could hit us. And what we did against them, and it really worked effectively, is we blitzed them a lot. So we were constantly blowing past them before they could actually get set to block us. And we always had people in their backfield, and it really did confuse them. And it confused all the teams we played.
Obviously, early in the season, you're not sure how things are going to go throughout the season. And you're down 10-0 at Kentucky, or against Kentucky, rather than that first game. It's only 10 points. But you're still not thrilled with yourself for giving up 10 points, but you shut it down at that point in time. So talk about that second half of that season, because that seems to, or that games, it seems to have allowed that season to kind of kick off in the right direction.
Do you remember the second half of that game?
Did you take a hit,
well,
Bob?
What's interesting about that, Kentucky, I think it was a 56-yard run that they made.
The first quarter.
Yeah. That was the longest run against us all year. And I have no idea. It was probably first game jitters. Even though we were seniors and juniors playing defense, I think. And we had a blend of, on defense, we actually had mostly seniors, quite a few juniors, and some sophomores that really contributed. Clarence Price, was one I know that
Boffman.
Mike Boffman, yeah, Mike Boffman, Jay Mathias, those are all sophomores. And the juniors, what happens in this whole thing, I'm digressing a little bit, what people don't realize is the junior class had many, many big contributors to us, okay? It was a small class. Pont didn't really recruit a large class there. The sophomores had a full class, but the juniors were large contributors, you know, to that Rose Bowl team. I mean, Nate Cunningham was a big contributor. Cal Snowden.
Al Gage.
Snidecki. Snidecki and I went to the same high school, so South Bend St. Joe. But in the second half, I think what happened is, you know, we just, one, it was hot, and two, we were in great shape because at the end of each practice, we'd run what we call gassers. We'd do 10 40s, and Ernie Plank would clock us, and he'd look at us, and if we were too slow, we'd run 11 or 12 40s. So guys got the idea real quick, just keep moving as fast as you can. And then we finished with a 30 and 20 and a 10. Well, by the time the fourth quarter got around, those sprints kicked in. I mean, we were in great shape.
Talking to Ken Kaczmarek and Bobby Moynihan of the 1967 Rose Bowl team. At what point during the season did you guys start to feel like the Big Ten Championship was really out there for you if you could get to it?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. You know, we were on a roll. We were listening to Howard Cosell on the TV every week, and it was kind of a dream going by, and those were close. I mean, this is close games. I don't know. I think we're, what, eight games that are just a couple points one way or the other, and, you know.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
12-10, 18-15.
Yeah, I think, eight of the games were decided in the last 4 minutes of the game, and it just kept rolling on. So, I don't know. I don't know exactly. I think you just keep playing, and I'm still haven't figured out. Ernie Plank was our position coach, and I think I'm not exactly sure who was calling all those blitzes, but
you liked it.
But we loved that. We loved to do that. You know, he'd come from one side, he'd come up the middle, he'd come from the other side, or we all go at it once. And I think it was very confusing. I don't think the 4-4 was being played that much around the country and kept. And then the weakness of the 4-4 could be you've got three defensive backs. Our guys were great. Our defensive backs played great. Nate played great. Those guys played great.
Dave Cornoa.
Yeah, Dave Cornoa. Yeah. You know, you read the newspaper articles on each game or the books or whatever it is, and they make play after play after play. And there's just three of them. And Nate was fast. Dave was quick, but not fast. He just was, I'm not going to be beat. He was that kind of guy. And so there's the miracle. I think Coach Nick Morosis had those guys back there, and I don't know how that all got coordinated. Kenny?
And Ken, in your obviously season, the big interception against Illinois that seals the game there, the Purdue play everybody knows about. But when you're in that position as a senior, leading by example, did you feel you were bringing the defense along with you, or were the guys always with you?
I think they were always with us. You know, if you go back to the last question, Illinois was a good kickstart for that season. It was on the road. Illinois had smoked us the year before. And Jim Byrne, I see him running with the ball my junior year with his hand raised the last 30 yards. I bet you I watched that 300, and there was no way in he was going to do that to us again. So we shut him down pretty well. And, you know, we ended up in a tight game, and it got broke open at the last couple of minutes with an interception. But to me, where we really, really got confidence was the Michigan game. Going up to Ann Arbor, you know, we came out there, we were ahead 20-0. And I said, man, these guys are not very good. And all of a sudden it's 20-20, and I said, whoa, this is a little bit different game. And we had to stop them on a drive, and they had like a 4th-and-1, and Ron Johnson the hole opened up, and luckily I filled it, and I hit him straight up, and he didn't get the first down. So that may be a bigger play than any play I made all year.
And then we went 95 yards for the winning touchdown.
Yeah, and then Eisenbacher got redemption, came out and had a great he ran with a vengeance that last series.
I bet he did. Talk a little bit about the Purdue game at the end, because then you know you at least had that shot at the end of the championship and the Rose Bowl possibility, but you had the bad taste in your mouth, too, from the road game up in Minnesota.
I mean, the Minnesota game was – we played well defensively for 3.5 quarters. It just got out of whack after we didn't cover a kick that was kind of a squibbly kick on a kickoff, okay? And after that, it was kind of then they got up, I think, 20-7, and that kind of finished us off. But that was, I think, we were within 10 minutes of, you know, we blocked the extra point. They're ahead 13-7, and I talked to a couple guys in the Hula Bowl, and he said, here it comes again. They're going to beat us 14-13. That was their thought process. And then, you know, then we just kind of – we had them – I think 3rd-and-25 or something like that. And we went into a kind of a prevent defense, and it was not a very aggressive defense. They ran an option, and they got the first down. And, you know, that one was one I really screwed up. I just screwed up the play. So.
They're human.
But the Michigan game, to me, was the one that really said, you know, we're for real.
Well, let's talk about Purdue, because you didn't screw up at the end of that one. You got that one exactly right and sealed the game right then and there. So that's the bucket game. We talked about that. That's the trophy game. That's the game that sent you to Pasadena.
Mean, Purdue, if you look at, like, the Purdue game, you know, we were beat up. We come back home. I did not participate in the rally in the field house because my wife had her sorority she was being initiated that night, so I asked Ponce, could I slip out, and he let me go.
You paid him back nicely.
I never saw the Minnesota rally, so you could probably describe that.
I was recovering from a broken leg at that time, and we were in the field house. Unbelievable, the vibration in there. I could, you know, 8,000. I think they estimate 8,000 people were in there, and everybody's wired. This is after a loss, you know. We're getting ready to go to Purdue, and then everybody starts doing the X's and O's in their head. What's it gonna take? Well, we got to beat Purdue. Now, the other part of that is a score of 51-6 from the year before. That 51-6 was on a locker room wall the whole season long, you know, and it was, that was for me one of the motivators, because I was out there getting mauled that day, and I said, you know, coach said it's never going to happen again, and it was a driving force for me to do everything I was looking for vengeance that day. I was on the sidelines with the broken leg, but I was, you know, when this guy next to me hit Perry and the ball came loose.
That was the 20th play of the drive.
And
20th play.
And time stood still, and Mike Walkman was back there, and all of a sudden he's on the ball. I couldn't believe it. It just, like, this is a miracle. That's what it was like. So here's the miracle worker to tell you about.
four Purdue turnovers in that game.
20th play of the drive.
Yeah, four Purdue turnovers in that game.
Well, we played 105 plays on defense.
Ooh. 20 of them on that drive.
And how often did you come out in situational substitutions? Probably
never.
Never, exactly.
Never. But what was interesting is after the Saturday night getting back in the pep rally, on Sunday – We used to go to Union to watch the film and get ready for next week and have a meal. Well, we walk in there, And there are all these champagne bottles and all these champagne glasses. And they get up there and they said, well, we were going to have a toast tonight to, you know, to the Big Ten and Rose Bowl champions, but we're going to have the champagne anyway because, you know, it was the psychological motivator, you know, drink it even though you lost. And then they started Monday. We got in there, and John Pond had a meeting for all the seniors. And they asked Doug Cruzan and Gary Castles if they wanted to go to the Senior Bowl. And they said yes. And then they asked me if I wanted to go to the Hula Bowl. Now, being from South Bend, I mean, I'd be crazy not to go to the Hula Bowl. So you know, he got our quick. And then we had good practices all week. We hit really hard on Tuesday and Wednesday. And you could see the confidence coming back. Thursday it was Thanksgiving, so half of us went. The defense went to Dr. Bamba's house. The offense went to Coach Pont's house. We practiced in the morning. We had turkey dinner in the afternoon. Friday we just went out in light sweats, and we were ready to win. The confidence was back. The Southerners had their swagger back. The seniors were not going to get humiliated 51-6. And the juniors also. So we were ready for them. And today, if you look at the game itself, there were four different shots on Leroy Keyes where these face masks on the helmets hit him in the ribs. Toward the end of the game, he could not pick his arms up. I mean, we beat him up. And we beat up Perry Williams also.
And thankfully you did. The fumble punt, John Punt hits one of the greatest punts he's ever hit, he claims. And the Hoosiers are victorious. Bucket champions, Big Ten
Eisenbacher
champions.
Eisenbacher did that, but Harold Morrow had to snap the ball. Remember, he was hurt. So snapping the ball was just as important as kicking it.
Yeah. Every play we've talked about tonight where we've tried to give or point out credit, everybody has jumped in and said, no, it was him and him and him, and that's what makes your chemistry great, and that's the sign of a great team. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it.
That's
Ken Kaczmarek and Bob Monahan, the linebackers from the 1967 Indiana Football Hoosiers. We're celebrating the 50th anniversary. You're listening to the 50th celebration of the 1967 Football Hoosiers from C3 in Renwick on WGCL. It's been 50 years since Indiana's remarkable Rose Bowl run, and we're celebrating tonight here at C3 Bar. Along with Dave Novak and Mark Deal, I'm Mike Glasgow. It's the 50th anniversary Rose Bowl celebration. It's presented tonight by the IU Credit Union. Thanks for listening at WGCL and WGCLradio.com. We've had a great night of guests and stories and everything else, and we continue on because we're taking you up until 8 o'clock tonight. And now we just talked to the linebackers from the team. Now we're going to talk about the players up front and a gentleman, the team captain, who was up front, then moved to the defensive side of the ball. So he'll give us perspective on both. We welcome in Harold Morrow, E.G. White, and Doug Cruzan. Gentlemen, thank you for being with us tonight. The 1967 Indiana Hoosiers, we have the Big Ten Championship trophy with us. I'll get that on social media, I promise. When I get a second, I'll get it up there and fire a few snaps away. But a great story, a great anniversary. Obviously, the big number is always weak round numbers and all of that. But this team we've heard tonight, from the wide receivers to the linebackers to the journalists, every time we've talked about it, and I made this point right before we went to the commercial break, hey, this guy made a play, and they'll jump in and say, well, yeah, but this guy, and this guy helped with that play. That chemistry, unbelievable. I've asked everyone, how did it come together? Was there anything special you did on or off the field, E.G., or Harold, whoever wants to start? Talk about how this team came together and why it galvanized each other going forward.
Well, I got a little different perspective in the sense that I'm one of the three fifth-year seniors. Got hurt, got redshirted with Bob Russell and Kevin Duffy. And so I guess we're the grandparents of these guys. But a lot of guys were asked to do different things. I played linebacker my first 2 years, and I ended up playing center my last years. I was a pretty good snapper, so maybe that's part of the equation and why I moved over there. It's interesting, the NCAA back at that time, I had to cut back on my schoolwork because you they had a rule that you couldn't, if you graduated, you had no more eligibility. So my fifth year, I took 6 undergraduate hours and 6 graduate hours in order to be able to compete. So I got half my master's paper, so it was a pretty nice deal for me. But we had a lot of great individuals on the team, a lot of young talent. And actually, you know, our the fifth-year guys and the seniors and juniors were recruited by Phil Dickens, and the rest were brought in by Coach Pond and then his new staff when he came from over to us in 64. So anyway, it was a combination of a lot of different things, a lot of seniority. A lot of guys that had played together on the line for a long time, and it just gelled, and we started believing in ourselves, and became the Cardiac Kids, winning at the last seconds, and that's what football's all about, really, you know, is win the games. I'll let E.G., maybe he has a different perspective than I did, but...
No, I believe Harold lifted up many good things. I really think, Mike, though, that part of this magic started the spring before, and there were some decisions made by the coaching staff and talking to the players. A big move. We had an all Big Ten offensive lineman. It turned out to be our captain. Was asked to move to defense. We had quite a position battle at quarterback, and Coach Pont and Jake Van Skoik, the running backs coach, opted to move John Eisenberger to tailback. And I think moves like this kind of set the tone. We all had to come back the following fall at a prescribed weight. I'll let Doug tell you what he had to come back at. But for some of us, it was a bit of a shock. And we tooled up the offense. We did a lot of option and ran the ball. Came up with a defensive wrinkle. Ran a 3-4-3. Which was different. And so I think these were some big contributing factors getting us set. As Harold said, great senior leadership, really outstanding. Had freshmen that filled key roles on both sides of the ball. And we had a lot of talent in that sophomore class. Doug?
Thank you. First, I'd like to say I wish I had taken 6 credit hours a semester. We'll start there. That would have been 6 hyper classes, 6 ones. I'd have been perfect with that. No, based upon what everybody has said, I look at that whole team and the way they gelled. You had the seniors, and I'll include Monk and Bob Russell and Kevin Duffy in that. Cassie. We had a bunch of seniors who had gone 2-8 and 1-8-1. And let's not forget that last game at Purdue in 66, 51-6. That was a wonderful day. It was 44-0 at halftime, but we held them. So we did good. And then to have the younger kids come in. And I've always said this before. I refer them to as brash sophomores. They hadn't played yet. They hadn't been beat to death yet by Michigan State or Ohio State or anybody. So they just went in there. It was like puppies. You get a puppy to run around. Then you had the
they
old.
They didn't know any better.
That's it. They did not know that they couldn't chew that pillow. Nobody told them. And then you have the older guys are going, okay, boys, you know, lighten up here. We're going to be okay, but here's what we got to do. So I think the combination of the three classes melded very well together, very well together. The personalities melded well together, and as a result, we had that 9-1 season.
Being a captain leader, you switching positions, do you think that set the tone and got everybody on board? If you would have said, you know, this is going to hurt my pro prospects, maybe I just want to do what's best for me, you selflessly did it. Did that help all these other changes?
How can you tell Coach Pont no? Let's really. I mean, I was sharing with each about this. You know, he called me in one day and he said, Doug, sit down. Okay. So he starts. He goes through the whole thing. This is what we think should be done. I went, okay, what is that? Well, we're moving you from offensive tackle to defensive tackle. Okay, all right. I mean, you got a nod. What the heck am I going to do? And then he said, on top of that, I want you to go from 265 to 235. That was 3 months to go. I had 3 months, 3.5 months to lose 30 pounds. I did come in at 232. I did. I made it. My parents were happy in Pittsburgh because I didn't eat as much.
So the bills weren't big.
But other than that, it was good. Now, it's a team. I told these, it's a team game. I mean, we're all players, and you do what's right, and you just pick your head up and go ahead. That's all.
Well, hear from EG and Harold then, too. Again, your captain has just decided that he'll buy into what the coach is saying to make this kind of sacrifice. I know everybody was asked to make some sacrifice, but that's got to mean the world at the team level, where the guy who everybody's looking up to says, yeah, okay, I'll do that, and here I have, and I've done that when he shows up.
Absolutely. He did. And as I said, I think that was it. Those moves the spring before were instrumental. I remember the last day of doubles, when the coaches announced doubles were over. The family came together. We jumped for joy as a team on that practice field, that we didn't have to practice that afternoon. It was great, and it carried over. This group has had a reunion every 5 years, and for many of us, all of us, it's guys that are able to come back, and their spouses and other members. It's like picking up a sentence in midstream 5 years later, and you don't miss a beat. It's really a special group of people.
I talk about the offensive line all the time on the show that Glass and I do, as not being talked about enough, and you guys are pillars of that, and Doug, you obviously moved to the defense, but now you've got the young kids coming in, and they're supposedly going to, quote-unquote, turn things around. How does that not, I won't say kick you in the gut a little bit, but as the guys who've been there for a while, how do you take that and go, okay, you know what, not only am I not worried about that, I'm going to kick butt for them, and we're going to make this happen?
Very true, you know, and I have to commend Doug, and I always listen to him anyway because he was from Pennsylvania like I was, so he was my captain way back when. We never played against each other in high school, but I would have loved to have played his high school, that's for sure. You know, our offensive line was pretty good. We were guys that had blended together, had played a lot together, understood each other, didn't miss too many assignments on the line. And thank God they gave Eisenberger number 17, because that's all he got to get through the hole was 17 inches. and, you know, Harry, 16 inches, so it got smaller as it went along. And so we were pretty good. But I think our whole backfield, back then they ran the 100, and you know, and they all ran under 10 flat and 100. And that's pretty good. And we had tailbacks. We would maybe have whichever tailback was in there, they all were fast. And, you know, Ricky Thompson and Purnell and, you know, Izzo. I mean, it was a great job blocking for him. You didn't have to hold your blocks that long. And so it was really, really good. We had a good scheme. And we put a lot of pressure on teams. And the other reason of Doug moving to defense is, you know, we ran a 4-4. No one in our league ran a 4-4. And it's almost impossible in 5 days to prepare for that kind of defense. And I think that was another deciding factor in why we, you know, were able to win close games. And in our defense that whole year, I don't know what the exact number is, probably 14 points or less. And that's and we averaged 19, so that's the Purdue score, 19-14. There you go. So pretty good.
Doug, you are part of an integral part of two of the most historic teams, one in college football and one in pro football, being a part of and captain of the 67 Indiana team, the greatest turnaround story in history of college football, and then starting on the 72-17-0 Miami Dolphins. What are the similarities? You are the only one that could say this. What are the Terry Cole also was your teammate there. What are the similarities of those two teams on and off the field?
Similarity is exactly what E.G. had mentioned in Monk 2. When you get together, it's like you just saw them yesterday. It's the same stories. It's the same faces. Everybody is still tight as heck. You know, so it's very similar to this team. They're absolutely identical in their personalities and the relationship of the players. Only problem is I had Bob Greasy as a quarterback. Hey, and if anybody remembers that Purdue game in 66, he was running for the Heisman Trophy against Steve Spurrier. Greasy did everything that game. He threw passes. He kicked field goals. He kicked extra points. They were trying. Spurrier won it instead. But, yeah, to have to go to Miami and then see him again, ugh. Not good.
Talk about during the season. At what point did you guys each kind of see the team and think, you know what, all that championship stuff and all that Rose Bowl stuff, there that really is a possibility for us?
Yes, it hit me, and I've said this, Bob Hamill, we did a thing with him a couple weeks ago. Two games, Michigan, going up there and beating Michigan at Michigan, and then Michigan State at Michigan State. After those, then those were what, mid 6-7-ish, and we were into it, and you begin to think, doggone it, we've got a good thing going here. And to be able to leave Bloomington and win games was great. But I think that's when it hit me. Those two games put me over the top as far as this is a really good football team.
And that Michigan State team, I mean, we talk about a couple of the games on your schedule, but that was a team the year before. That was the famous 10-10 tie with Notre Dame. I mean, they were loaded. Purdue was loaded at the time. There were some excellent, excellent teams in the Big Ten that you guys had to go through.
Yeah, there were. And after the couple of years, we played Michigan State all 3 years, and they were brutal. I mean, their defense, they were absolutely a fantastically built team and all that stuff. So it was good.
One thing that I looked at with this schedule that always is odd to me is, how did you guys end up having to go to Arizona in the middle of the season? Did anyone ever figure out who scheduled that and what the reason was for
break.
That? Is that just a spring break type trip? Or you know?
Just real quick, yeah. We got there, and it was so hot. And then, you know, they would always do something for you, especially when you had an extra day. And they took us out to the aircraft graveyard that's there.
Yeah.
And we're walking around in this heat, and those metal airplanes reflecting off of that. And I'm thinking, oh, man, I'm going to die tomorrow night. Game time, 8 o'clock. Somebody pulled the curtains down and turned on the air conditioner. It was just gorgeous weather. Gorgeous weather. But that, when I first got there, I went, oh, who did this? It was like, what, eighth game of the year or seventh or eighth? And you know, up here, you know, everybody's putting on coats, you know, and hoods. So, anyway.
You must have liked the temperature.
When you go to Arizona, does it take your mind out of what you were doing? It wasn't a vacation. We know you're playing football. Did you find it as inconvenient? Hey, well, let's get back into league play. Or did you take it as, we just have to play the games on our schedule? Is that some of your mental stuff, toughness?
Yeah, it was a big challenge for us, you know, playing out of the, you know, league. But you know what? We went out there, and they got us right back into shape. And we come off the plane. There was a tractor sitting there with a guy with a straw hat on and a big hayseed in his mouth. And I don't know whether they were trying to tell us that we were, you know, farmers or, you know, backcountry guys or what, but I only played a half. and Jay, I don't know, he would have had 20 touchdowns if we'd have kept him in the game. You know, he was incredible that game. And, you know, it's an interesting thing. You know, we didn't play Ohio State that year, and Arizona went into Ohio State and beat them, and we go out there and kill them, you know, by 35, 40 points. So, you know, maybe if we had a chance to play Ohio State that year, we would have done pretty good against them. I don't know. We always were well prepared. Our coaches prepared us very well. We had game plans set up, and we hit. I mean, I'd love to play nowadays. I mean, no doubles.
Six credit hours.
Remember, guys,
you don't have to hit anybody.
I chose to go through another double.
You're not sprinting like you guys are sprinting.
In the spring. So, you know, I had extra practice a lot. And I actually had extra practice because I had to go out 20 minutes early and snap the ball all the time. Two things about the Michigan and Michigan State game. Michigan game, I want to get something straight up here. You know, everyone's talking about punt, John, punt, and it was in Sports Illustrated. It was a perfect snap. I don't know what the hell got in it. You know, it was right on the right hip for a right-handed, right-footed punter, okay? So it was a perfect snap, and I even brought the film to him and showed him. But I was going down the field, and I look over, he's running next to me, and he gets tackled. I says, what are you doing? So John settled that on the sideline, but you have to give Eisenberger credit. He came in and he ran that ball down that field and scored the winning touchdown. Now I'm going to get on to Michigan State. We're playing Michigan State, tight game. Okay, now we get down, we score. Iso, I think, scored the touchdown. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, we go to snap. Okay, I put my hands on the ball. I'm ready to snap the ball, and I feel this warm stuff going all over my hands. I'm going, what? I look up. The guy, the nose man, was chewing tobacco and spit chewing tobacco all over my hands before I snapped it to kind of get my mind off of, you know, getting the ball back there. But thank God I was able to do it, and we kicked extra point and won the game. So, yeah. So, but E.G. may have some
snap, monk, snap.
It wasn't a, you know, I said you didn't even mention my name in the Sports Illustrated article.
Talk about after the Minnesota game. This is when the veterans come in. This is when the captain comes in. This is when the message has to be there from the leaders on the team. So, what was the message then in that whole next week leading up to Purdue?
Getting off the plane in Indianapolis and the ride back from the airport was very quiet. You could hear a pin drop all the way back. And the buses pulled in, and we went into the old, what is now the Gladstein Fieldhouse, which was a basketball arena. We thought, what? And everybody said, go on in there. We walked in, the lights went on, and you'd have to ask Max or Bob Hamill or somebody, but there were 5,000 to 10,000 people waiting on us. Impromptu pep rally, and we all kind of looked at each other. I really think it helped set the stage. I heard Kenny mention the dinner the next day, after we looked at film. It was a white linen tablecloth dinner. There was champagne. Each one of us got a glass of champagne with our meal, and it really kind of got us looking forward to Purdue and put Minnesota behind us.
Yeah, that was a rude awakening that day. You know, that was maybe, you know, a 33-7, I think. It wasn't that bad for a while, but then it really got ugly. 13-7 in the fourth quarter, so it wasn't that bad. But they were big. You know, they were good. They were really good. And, you know, coming into Purdue, it was, I think, for Cassie and Monk and juniors and seniors, it was a revenge game, so to speak, because of what they had done to us the year before. And I've heard this reference many times, that they thought that Purdue team was the best Purdue team they'd had in a long, long time, even before Greasy and all the rest of those. So we knew we had a challenge ahead, and everybody pulled together, worked hard, and had some great plays, both offensively and defensively. Yeah, Terry Cole, two long runs, and so everything was put together.
Did that speak to how the season went because you changed your, I don't want to say your offense, but changed your attack in the final game? He had the confidence in the line to do that. He had the confidence in the players to say, hey, look, Purdue thinks we're going to run this. We're going to switch it up. That had to be pretty amazing.
The coaches did a really good job of examining Purdue and coming up with trap plays that we hadn't run all year and the different blocking schemes that we came up with that game. But, you know, and it was probably the highest, one of the highest ranked teams. Mark, you would know better than I.
Third, the highest ranked team we've ever beat.
Okay. Yeah. I knew they were ranked pretty high. And we had, you know, they held us after Cass caused a fumble and everything. And we had a punt, so we snapped the ball. Iso kicks, was over 60 yards.
79.
70 yards.
70-yard punt.
Okay, but then the defense has to come in and hold them at the end for us to win the game.
And they do.
So everyone had their part, and everyone just stepped up and did do your job. It's almost like Belichick, do your job, okay? And, you know, and I was fortunate, you know, when I got finished playing, to have Coach Pond offer me a coaching job at 23 years old. That never happens today. You know, and I coached, you know, 15 years in the Big Ten, Coach Mark, and I played with his brother. So we go back a long way, and So it's very interesting of what happens to your life, you know, and every one of these guys that we have are very, very successful individuals.
You know, Max Skirvin brought that up to me at one of the breaks. He said, not only is one of the best football teams ever, he said, if you look at these guys off the field and their success, that says something about how you guys did your school, did your work, stay together, and were good people. Talk about how Indiana shaped you moving forward.
Oh, no question, you know, and for me, you know, I already stated my case, you know, at 23 coaching on a Division I team. I mean, I learned real quick, though, after 2 years, I better find better players because better players make you a really good coach. So,
didn't make him a very good coach.
No, he didn't. No, I tell him that all the time. So everybody has a role. Everyone, you know, needs to do their job. And so it was really, really important. And my life was cut. I'd stayed in coaching and coached all my life. The only thing that happened to me that was intriguing is when I retired, 3 weeks, my wife told me I better find something to do. Great team, great players. Even our younger kids, when we come back for our reunions and our team now, and they see us, we don't even shake hands. We just hug each other. They say, man, you guys don't even shake. Nope, that's our handshake. So I'll let E.G. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, thanks, Harold. I agree. I mean, we had a lot of successful people. Move on from college, and they were successful in what they did, and they also gave back. Our team was the first team to create an endowed scholarship for athletics, and we did it amongst the players and the family, if you will. We did one for Coach Pont in his honor. A number of us participated in one for Coach Brown, who was an icon to all entering freshmen. So we just a great group of people, very successful in whatever they chose to do. Doug?
Monk, were you still taking 6 hours when you were coaching? This is killing me. I'm just telling you.
Jeez. And they weren't all hyperplexed.
You sure?
I got my master's in special education.
Oh, I can see
that.
I just can't get over this 6 hour stuff. Man.
50 years, we found something new out.
Yeah, that's. Oh boy.
We had a lot of candidates.
One thing I want to say, and I think Kaz, I don't know if he mentioned this, the week of the Purdue game, okay, as far as the defense is concerned, and hold me if I'm not right here, they laid the big dummies on the sidelines. So after everything you did as a defensive player, you went over and speared that dummy. Now, watch the films when Leroy Keyes went out. Because back in, that was all legal. But that was the type of preparation that week for that game. So you could imagine when you were done with a play, you'd run over and spear the dummy, get back up, and line up again.
Gentlemen, we thank you so much. Indiana University thanks you. Everybody here tonight thanks them. Let's give our players, Bob Hamill and Max Skirvin, a round of applause. And Mark Deal, the first family of Indiana football. What a special and fantastic night. We thank Eric Stolberg and the gang at C3 for all out as well. 50 years is a long time, but it's a great number, and I bet you guys have to answer that question everywhere you go. When's the next one going to be? And we hope it's sooner than later. Absolutely. Thank you all so much for your work for that behind the scenes with Indiana University and even Mark to this day, obviously. Great job as always. Hey, this was fun, huh?
Absolutely.
I knew an hour wouldn't be enough. And nope. Mark said 2 hours wasn't going to be enough, but sadly.
We broke news tonight. I mean, that's the great thing
about
us. We
did break news tonight, and we broke a lot of great stories. And everybody to take the time to come out and do this is just fantastic, and it really speaks volumes to why the Big Ten trophy is sitting here and why that season was so successful. You've been listening to the 50th anniversary Rose Bowl celebration presented by the IU Credit Union. For Dave Novak, I'm Mike Glasscott. Thank you for being with us. And we'll see you all down the road. Go Hoosiers, Indiana at Illinois coming up on Saturday. The start of a 3-game winning streak before The third bowl game.
One in a row.
Mark likes the coach speak at one in a row, but the Hoosiers are going to do that. Again, thanks to our producer, Alex Lester, back at WGCL. Thanks to the staff here at C3, all of our sponsors tonight, and the IU Credit Union. For Dave Novak, I'm Mike Glascott. Have a great night. Thanks for being with us.